Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. At a January 20th press conference in Columbus, Ohio's new director of the Ohio Department of Development said he got the lay of the land over there in about 9 days.
We're not just competing on a world stage. We're not just competing on a state stage. We're competing on a local stage as well. And what we need to do is really create an environment and a department that allows us to move at the pace of business.
Should government operate at the pace of business? That's what we're talking about this hour. Coming up later, we'll hear from the new director of the Ohio Department of Development, Mark Kwame. We'll also hear from Alex Fisher. He's the president and CEO of the Columbus Partnership. It's a civic group dedicated to improving the business climate in Central Ohio. Right now, we introduce Phil Matera. He is the research director of Good Jobs First, and he's director of the Corporate Research Project. He's been doing strategic corporate research for labor, environmental, public interest, and other activist groups around the country for the past 2 decades. Welcome to the show, Phil.
Happy to be here.
In your report, Public-Private Power Grab, you write about seven other states that have used the idea of the public-private partnership to generate jobs in their states. Can you tell us how you started with that?
Well, we have been following the proposals that had arisen in Ohio and in several other states, including Wisconsin, Iowa, and Arizona, in recent months to take this step of transferring economic development functions from a state agency to a so-called public-private partnership. And given that the proponents of this idea usually pointed to other states as models, particularly states such as Indiana and Michigan, we decided to take a look at the track record of those states that had previously made this change.
And what did you find?
Well, we found that it was not a very impressive track record, that these states have had a series of problems. First of all, we found that this is not a new idea, that this has actually started, almost 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And despite that period of time, it had been adopted in only a small number of states. And even in those states, there have been repeated problems with the misuse of public money, problems with conflicts of interest involving the business people who are put on the board of these entities, problems with accurate reporting about job creation by these entities, because that's supposedly their main objective, is to improve the job situation in the state.
Mm-hmm.
And we've just seen these problems across the board in all the states that have done this. And as a result, we concluded that this is probably not such a great idea, and that there probably are more effective ways to improve the job-creating performance of a state, other than just handing over the process to a bunch of business executives.
You write about the misuse of taxpayer funds. Can you give us an example of what you're talking about there?
Yeah, the thing to remember here is that when these public-private partnerships are created, they end up using a combination of public money, of taxpayer money, and of private contributions from corporations. For example, we saw a situation in Rhode Island where the Economic Development Corporation there, was found to have mishandled public funds, and the director of that entity, had to resign as a result, involved the inappropriate use of state credit cards by people employed by this entity.
Mm-hmm.
We also found some problems in Florida, or Enterprise Florida, where officials there were using the state jets for travel by spouses of officials in that agency. So, these things can happen in a state agency as well.
I was going to say, misuse of taxpayer funds was kind of, the whole idea was coined by state workers, wasn't it?
Right, of course, yeah. And there were also cases of private, country club memberships being charged to the public accounts. But yes, those things can happen in a state agency. But the point is that the proponents of this idea are claiming that, if you hand things over to the private sector and you let the private sector operate the way it does, that somehow by itself is going to make things more effective and efficient. And what we're saying is that there's no evidence that change by itself is going to lead to much of an improvement.
You're listening to All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and my guest is Phil Matera. He's the research director of Good Jobs First and director of the Corporate Research Project. We're talking about his recent report, Public-Private Power Grab, and it is within the context of plans by the governor of the state of Ohio to privatize the Ohio Department of Development. We're coming up later. We're going to meet the new director of the Ohio Department of Development, whose first job is to dismantle it, in essence, and create a public-private partnership, and that's kind of what we're talking about right now. Also joining us in a little while, Alex Fisher. He is president and CEO of the Columbus Partnership. If you have a question or comment for our guest, Phil Matera, right now, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You also note questionable subsidy awards by, you said, the subset of the public-private partnerships that have a role in these processes. What do you mean by a questionable subsidy awards? These are grants given to businesses?
Yeah, well, remember that what goes by the name of economic development really consists of two main things. One is general marketing and promotion of the state to companies to get them to invest in the state. But often what goes along with that is awarding subsidies, you know, tax breaks, grants, loans, other kinds of things that are called incentives to get the company to come. And some of these privatized agencies have a major role in that process. Some of them have a more limited role. But in the cases of those that are involved, for example, in Michigan, the Michigan Economic Development Corporation last year was found to have approved a multi-million dollar award to a company headed by someone who was a convicted embezzler. Now, if you're trying to argue that, you know, the private sector, you know, is more efficient, is more effective, et cetera, situations like that don't help to make the case. It just shows that a privatized entity can, you know, cause some real problems as well as a public entity. And, you know, what's particularly problematic is that once you put business executives on the board of these privatized entities, and that's part of the whole point of the process, is that a lot of those will be people representing companies that themselves might be trying to get subsidies. So you're creating an inherent conflict of interest. And we saw this problem in places like Florida and Texas. You know, in Florida, board members of Enterprise Florida were getting huge subsidies for their own companies. And there's some question about whether they were getting preferential treatment because they were members of the board. In Texas, it turned out that big campaign contributors to Governor Perry down there were among the biggest recipients of these subsidy awards.
Well, I'll just loop back again and say quid pro quo for campaign contributions is not a new concept. It could be happening in a publicly run agency as well.
Well, certainly. But then the question is, what's the point of privatizing? I mean, I haven't seen any clear argument besides kind of slogans like moving at the speed of business that, to really, make the case that these agencies are going to be more effective. In fact, the model that's often put up is that of the Indiana Economic Development Corporation. And last year, there were investigative reporting showing that this IEDC was exaggerating its job creation record. Now, again, that could happen in the public sector, but the point is that there's no evidence that these privatized entities, these entities controlled by business executives, are more effective, and they may, in fact, create bigger problems with accountability and oversight. So if they don't solve the problem, then what's the point of doing it?
One of the concerns that's been raised in Ohio, and I wonder if this has been the case with the other states that you looked at, is the transparency issue. They want, when we talk about public-private partnership, the private part is on what goes on in closed-door meetings, and they don't want the public to be privy to that. They say that's part of doing business. You can't be, telling everybody what's on your mind when you're trying to cut a deal with a company.
Well, the first thing to remember is they're playing with taxpayer dollars. So there's a limit to how secretive they can be, because the taxpayers have a right to know how their money is being used and is being transferred to private parties. even if it does ultimately lead to economic development and job creation. Now, you know, we acknowledge that there are certain kinds of information, proprietary business information, you know, that can be kept confidential, right? If a company mm-hmm. has to submit a business plan to the agency in order to get a subsidy, we're not saying that that automatically has to become public. But the public does have a right to know which companies are being considered, what's the track record of those companies, what are the affiliations of those companies with the privatized entity, with members of the board of that entity, you know, relationships with the governor and other elected officials, you know, to make sure that we're not creating a system dominated by, you know, cronyism and pay-to-play practices.
Phil, since you've done this work researching these states, you maybe have a pretty good idea of what would work, what could work?
Well,
because so far the states haven't really done that good of a job in the public sector creating jobs. Ohio's lost hundreds and hundreds of thousands of jobs in the last 20 years.
Well, some of the states with privatized economic development functions have also had a problem with high unemployment mm-hmm. and poor job creation.
Michigan.
Yeah. I mean, so I think what we're saying is that the status of the agency by itself is probably not decisive in the job creation function. I mean, and our concern is that by focusing so much attention on this process of privatization, it may be giving false hopes to the workers of Ohio that this step by itself is necessarily going to create a lot of new jobs. I mean, the problem of job creation, particularly in the current economy, is a very complicated question. And whether the person promoting the state is a, you know, is a state official or is an employee of this privatized entity doesn't really make that much difference in the end.
A lot of these jobs that they're talking about privatizing would take away from the rank and file of that we, as we know it, in state government operations, many of whom are unionized workers with the state. How much does that play into criticism of plans to privatize agencies like the Department of Development?
Well, that is a concern. I mean, we certainly think that, if you're going to do this, I mean, we don't think it's a good idea, but if you do it, the employees of the agency should retain collective bargaining rights in the privatized entity. But, you know, beyond the question of labor rights, this also speaks to the issue of accountability, because if people have union protection on the job, they're more likely to speak up if there's some wrongdoing going on. And it's easier to be a whistleblower if you have union protection than if you can just be fired at the whim, you know, of your supervisor. And given the track record of scandals in these privatized entities, it's not beyond the realm of imagination that a privatized economic development agency in Ohio might have some accountability problems. And we think that a union there would make it easier for rank and file workers to speak up and, you know, let the legislature and others know about those problems.
Okay, we're going to have to take a quick break. My guest is Phil Matera. He is research director for Good Jobs First. Coming up, Alex Fisher of the he's president and CEO of the Columbus Partnership. We're going to continue our conversation about the idea of privatizing the Ohio Department of Development. It looks like it's a plan that's online to occur. It's just a few steps away from being enacted in the Ohio General Assembly, and the governor's all for it. So stay with us, and we'll be right back. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
In the U.S., polio may seem like history. Vaccines reduced the once dreaded disease by 99%, but polio still erupts in India, Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Nigeria. The Gates Foundation's polio program has an ambitious goal: destroy the disease once and for all. I'm Neil Conan, Bill Gates, on the final eradication of polio. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation this afternoon from 2 until 4 on 89.7 NPR News. And it's 18 degrees in downtown Columbus, cloudy skies today, and we could reach a high right around 30 degrees. A chance of snow turning into freezing rain and sleet tonight, a low of 29 degrees. Expect some rain and mixing with freezing rain for Tuesday, and the high right around 33 degrees. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News. Thanks for joining us.
Welcome back to All Sides. We're talking about plans to privatize the state's job creation agency. Coming up in the next segment is the new director of the Ohio Department of Development, Mark Kwame. Joining us from last hour is Philip Matera. He's research director of Good Jobs First and director of the Corporate Research Project. Thanks for being with us, Phil.
Happy to do so.
Also joining the conversation now is Alex Fisher. He's president and CEO of the Columbus Partnership. It's a civic organization formed about 9 years ago to strengthen the economic and cultural base of Central Ohio. Welcome to the show, Alex.
Good morning, Ann. Hello, Phil.
Hi.
You support the Jobs Ohio plan that would privatize the Ohio Department of Development, but oversight and transparency have been raised as issues of concern. How do you react to those concerns? And
you know, absolutely. We have to put a system in place that has the right checks and balances. I'm confident that our legislative leaders and governor are committed to that. I think, as you accurately point out, if people are going to do something bad, they can do it within government and they can do it in the private sector. And so we should be concerned about accountability at all levels of the private sector and government. But I don't believe scare tactics are the reason to be fearful that we shouldn't try something new. Our state has serious issues. We should take the best lessons from within government and the private sector from around the country and think about how we're going to do this the Ohio way. I don't believe there is a model that is trying to be emulated. I think what we have to do is take the best practices from around the country and think about putting the model together as a part of Ohio's effort to transform the economy.
Phil brought up earlier the idea of whistleblower protection, that with unions you have that, with collective bargaining rights you have something like that. Whistleblower protection's always been a big part of any kind of oversight that Ohio agencies have been under. Should that be a component in this public-private partnership?
Yeah, look, I mean, I'm not an expert in whistleblower rules and regulations, but I would think that protections that allow concerns to be raised and those that are raising them to be protected would be something that would be an important component. You don't have to be a unionized worker, however, to have whistleblower protection in the public or private sectors.
Well, it's often a component of it, though. 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Tom from Circleville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed the show, and especially this. My concern is that our governor is now bringing all these private businesses into government, where there will be hardly any oversight, even though they say they're going to have oversight. We'll be themselves checking on themselves. And I believe what's going to happen is the same thing that happened with the firm that our governor worked for. Basically, they're going to strip it dry, and we're going to be in a worse position than we are now. And about him saying that you don't need a union for whistleblower protection, that gentleman there, I can tell you for a fact, if you're a private individual working for a company and you bring that company for, let's say, an EPA violation, you're not going to have a job.
Okay.
Whether they fix the EPA violation or not, you're still out the door.
Okay.
Okay.
Alex Fisher, what about the idea of cronyism? It's probably a lot of people's biggest fear.
You know, look, again, I think you can have cronyism within government and outside of government. We've got to protect against it. I start from the position that people are good and that we can do this in the right sort of way for the future of Ohio. I think there's a lot that the private sector can and should bring to the world of economic development. Job creation occurs by entrepreneurs. Job creation occurs in the private sector. That's where we've been losing jobs, and candidly, that's where we need to grow jobs. And so the idea that we would want to engage the private sector in the process of economic development and job creation, from my standpoint, is a strong concept. We should start from the concept that the private sector is good, that the private sector has something to add to economic development, that the private sector can lead job creation in our state and throughout the Midwest. And from there, we should think about the right protections that we want to put in place to make sure that we are guarding against any potential misdeeds. But we should be doing that at all levels of government.
What exactly does the private sector do that it would do for the government? Maybe the government should just get out of job creation altogether and just let the private sector do its thing.
Well, look, I think what the private sector does is bring a perspective of how to create jobs. It brings a perspective of what it means to risk capital. It brings a perspective of what it means to expand a plant and produce a product. And so it's those private sector perspectives that come to bear on marketing our state and retaining existing industries in our state. If you look at the statistics, some 90% of the jobs lost in Ohio over the last several years have been lost to other states. We need to bring that private sector perspective to bear on that problem and get the engagement of our CEOs around the state in helping to sell the good news about Ohio.
Well, if I could jump in here,
sure,
I mean, if the private sector has a useful perspective, there's no reason why the Department of Development cannot consult, you know, private, you know, corporate executives and, you know, and other leading figures in the private sector. That doesn't mean that the private sector has to take over the Department of Development.
Yeah, good. I think, Phil, I think that's a good point. I mean, I don't know that there is a single silver bullet in the world of economic development. But I start from the premise that engaging the private sector is a positive thing in that perspective. I look at what we do at the local level as a model. And it's not only what we do here in Columbus. I could talk about Austin. I could talk about Nashville. I could talk about Raleigh, Minneapolis, and Indianapolis, all who have public-private partnerships at the local level driving economic development. Again, it's not government doing it alone. It's not the private sector doing it alone. They're public-private partnerships. Ours is called Columbus 2020. Chambers of commerce around the country do this in a tried and proven manner. I'm sure that the naysayers could find a few problems in any of those efforts, just as you could in government. But if it works at the local and regional level and has for the last 30 and 40 years in economic development, I don't understand why trying it at the state level, modeled against what's been very successful all around the country at the local level, isn't worth a serious try.
Well, you make a good
at the local level, they're usually supplementing what government
right.
agencies are doing. They're not replacing it, and that's the issue.
You talk,
when you're giving the private sector complete control over the process.
Alex, you talk about taking models at the local level. So are you talking about taking a lot of different models and instituting them at the state level, or is there one local level model that would translate at the state level? Is there can you make a leap? I mean, local is much more consolidated. People know each other better. They're kind of all working with the same region. You get at the state level, you have regions competing against each other. You have bigger companies competing against each other.
So if I just look across the state of Ohio, mm-hmm. you've got our effort in Columbus. You've got the Dayton Development Coalition. You've got Team NEO in the Cleveland Partnership. You've got Cincinnati 360 in the efforts of the Cincinnati Business Coalition. All private public partnerships that are doing economic development. I would think that designing a state public-private partnership in concert with those and others around our state so that you don't work in isolation but that you work in collaboration with our local efforts would be a really smart thing to do. Now, you have to realize, why are we doing this? We have a serious crisis. We've lost 400,000 jobs in the state of Ohio. I think everybody understands that. I think it requires all of us, whether public sector or private sector, to think creatively about the models of the future that can change the paradigm. If we continue to do things the way that we've always done them, then we're likely to get the same results. Now, that doesn't mean that you throw caution to the wind and you don't put in accountability measures, we should absolutely hold our governor accountable, hold Mark Kwame accountable, and hold ourselves accountable. But we shouldn't be afraid of entrepreneurship. We shouldn't be afraid of engaging the private sector that creates the bulk of all jobs in the world, getting engaged in helping their state, getting engaged in helping their local communities.
Mark Kwame said that he's rationalizing the Department of Development right now. This is from that same press conference on January 20th.
One thing we are doing right now is rationalizing all the different departments inside the Development Department, figuring out what works for job creation and job retention. Those are the two things I am very focused on right now.
Now, Alex, in Tennessee, you were the commissioner of the Tennessee Department of Economic and Community Development. During your tenure, the state of Tennessee brought in more than $40 billion in new capital investment, was named State of the Year for its economic development and accomplishments. A part of what you did was create the Tennessee Economic Partnership, however, a public-private operation. What did you do with all the ancillary activities in the Department of Development in Tennessee at the time? Because there's a lot of stuff that goes on in the Ohio Department of Development, for Ohio's Home Energy Assistance Program, Ohio's Neighborhood Stabilization Program are housed there. There's the marketing, there's tourism, all kinds of stuff.
You know, look, I think what we did, and I've, gosh, you're dating me, I go back 16 years to when we first went into government.
And times were better then as well.
And times were a lot better. And so I think you also have to rationalize against the times that we're in. But one of the first things we did was to pare back to the basics of economic development, the marketing and recruiting of new companies, existing industry, and the startup of new entrepreneurial companies in our state at the time. We laid off a number of employees that weren't central to the core mission of job creation. We did create the Tennessee Economic Partnership in partnership with leading businesses all across our state to engage the private sector in those efforts. Again, I don't know that 16 years later, though, that that's necessarily a model, but I think there are a lot of lessons learned moving forward. I come from the fundamental that the private sector creates jobs. It is very important to have a private sector perspective. I'm proud that Ohio now has Mark Kwame and John Kasich leading our economic development efforts. I would dare say there may not be another state in America that has two individuals with the amount of private sector experience that they have. And when you're talking to business CEOs about expanding a company, about relocating a company, having private sector voices speaking to those private sector voices, I think is an important piece of the equation.
Bruce from Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ann. Yes, sir, I don't see that the private sector has done too much for this country with all of our jobs being outsourced and people making large sums of money because of that. The public has suffered, and thank God we didn't go along with investing our Social Security in the stock market. And I think that the privatization of our government is getting way out of hand.
You know, Alex, I mean, from Enron to BP to to Wall Street, people are not exactly enamored with the private sector in this company right now, or at least a lot of people are.
No, look, I can appreciate it. Again, we've got to have accountability in the corporate boardrooms of America as well. I'm not sure where the caller who just called in works. It'd be interesting to know whether or not they work for a private sector company. I mean, I'm very proud of what our private sector companies, I'll speak just for the Columbus Partnership here in Central Ohio, 38 leading companies who employ one in every four individuals in Central Ohio, and that's just from 38 companies. I would dare say that the folks and the families that are employed by those companies are proud to have the jobs that they have and the wages that they get. Beyond that, though, I fundamentally believe that job creation gets its start, has its genesis in the private sector. And there may be some that have a philosophical divide with that, and mm-hmm. I'm not sure this is a place necessarily to try to debate that. I come back to the fundamentals. Private sector, public-private partnerships have been around and worked at the local level for years and years. Appropriate accountabilities and controls can be put into place. We should not shirk the private sector's willingness to get involved. Here locally, we've raised over the last several months $25 million to support economic development from the private sector. I'm proud that the private sector is responding. I think they'll do that across our entire state and that we can put a new model together. We'll have to tweak it, I'm sure. Not everything will be right initially, but we should start with the premise that the private sector isn't bad and evil, but rather the private sector is good in its efforts to create jobs.
Phil Matera, one of the criticisms of state-run departments of development and job creation agencies like them is that they move too slowly. And you say it's like a slogan, it's a catchy phrase to say move at the pace of business, but there is something to be said for being able to turn on a dime. And is there any recommendations after doing your research that you would make to state departments of development or those kinds of agencies to help them react more nimbly, or nimbler, I should say, to changes in the business environment?
Well, I'm sure that there are, you know, ways in which the state agencies can be more efficient, perhaps act more quickly. But there are times when you don't want to act too quickly, because I think what often happens is that companies try to rush states into deals, and states end up overpaying in the subsidy packages that they award to companies. And part of the problem here is the role played by middlemen known as site location consultants. And they, you know, they put the pressure on, you know, state and local governments, you know, to offer, you know, inflated subsidy packages to companies, and they, you know, create competitions and bidding wars between localities to get jobs. And as a result, sometimes a locality may get some jobs, but they may end up paying very heavily for it in the form of, you know, giving away huge amounts of future tax revenue. So I'm not sure that acting quickly is always the best way to approach this.
Well, I guess one thing I would agree with Phil is the competition is intense. I would dare say that 50 governors have woken up this morning worried about job in their individual states. And the efforts that I'm seeing all across the country, the aggressive efforts that I'm seeing, suggest that we here in Ohio had better equally get aggressive. We better try some new things. We better make sure that we are on the front line of what other states are doing. We ought to learn from the best practices, deploy them here in Ohio, make sure that we hold ourselves accountable, make sure that we have transparency. But the time to act is now. We don't have time based on the blood that's been lost in the streets in job creation to continue to sit back and assume that doing things the way that we've always done them is going to improve our situation in our state.
That's all the time we have for this segment. I want to thank my guests, Phil Matera. He's Research Director for Good Jobs First. Phil, thanks for joining us today.
Happy to do so.
And also Alex Fisher. He's President and CEO of the Columbus Partnership. Alex, thanks for joining us in the studio.
Great to be with you.
Coming up, we'll meet the Ohio Department of Development's new director, Mark Kwame. So stay with us. We'll be right back. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, the Black Keys. Their recent album, Brothers, has been nominated for 4 Grammys. Their songs have been used in the films Zombieland and the Twilight Saga Eclipse, as well as in the HBO series Eastbound and Down and Big Love. Join us.
I must admit, I can't explain. Any of these dogs racing through my brain.
And Fresh Air begins later today at noon. This is 89.7 NPR News. And in 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, Hour 2 of All Sides begins. Popular TV shows like CSI portray death investigators as high-tech sleuths, but a PBS Frontline report says the American system has few standards and little oversight. We'll talk about the national picture and the local picture here in Ohio on All Sides with Ann Fisher at 11 o'clock right here on 89.7 NPR News. WOSU Public Media presents the Columbus Metropolitan Club's Wednesday Forum. Wednesday at noon, it's Electric Cars Might Drive Our Future, featuring the director of Ohio State's Center for Automotive Research. Tickets and more information available at columbusmetroclub.org. And it's currently 20 degrees in downtown Columbus, increasing clouds today and a high of 30 degrees. There is a winter storm watch that goes into effect this evening through Tuesday afternoon. A chance of snow, freezing rain, and sleet overnight tonight, a low of 29 degrees. And then for Tuesday, rain and freezing rain with sleet mixing in there in the morning, and then rain likely in the afternoon, a high of 33 degrees. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides. Governor John Kasich appointed Mark Kwame on January 10th to lead the Ohio Department of Development, or maybe it's better put, to deconstruct the Ohio Department of Development and in its place create a public-private partnership called Jobs Ohio. Director Kwame, before his appointment, was a partner at Sequoia Capital in Menlo Park, California. He was chairman and CEO of CKS Group, an advertising agency, and through that helped launch operations such as Yahoo, Excite, eBay, and Amazon. Welcome to the show, Director.
Hi, thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
First of all, how do you define the speed of business? What does that really mean?
Well, it can mean several different things, but basically each time that you're in a business transaction, you need to figure out what the timelines are that are available to you, and any smart salesperson will do that. Sometimes you have hours, sometimes you have weeks, sometimes you have months, but you have to assess out what is that timeline so that you can make sure that you can put your best foot forward in that timeline.
And that makes sense as a private business operator completely, but as my previous guest Phil Matera of Good Jobs First mentioned, that sometimes when you're juggling the public's money, maybe you need to take a step back and make sure that somebody's not, cutting a deal that is not necessarily long-term and advantageous for the state.
Well, I mean, one thing that one thing that was a bit of a surprise to me entering the department is that, we would put together proposals for companies and not know exactly how much that company was paying the state in taxes, whether it be payroll taxes or in CAT tax or sales tax and things like that. And so one of the first things I did was sit down and say, okay, when is this thing ROI positive to the state? Because if you have those metrics, then you can make those decisions a little bit more rationally and really understand, the quickness of that decision can be done in a much more efficient way.
Accountability has been raised. How would this new public-private partnership be accountable? And I've had an email from Sherry from Columbus on that score. She says, Has the governor set a goal in numbers of jobs within the first year or two for this new version of the Department of Development? If there aren't any goals, how will success or failure be measured?
I think that's an excellent question. What we will do is actually when we come out with Jobs Ohio, we will set very specific metrics. We will show the public where we are on each one of those metrics, whether it's job creation, whether it's job retention, whether it's capital investment, whether it's headquarter development of new companies or retaining headquarters here in the state of Ohio. That is job number one. So in our annual report, we will display all of those things very carefully, as well as in each one of our public four board meetings.
A lot of people, for them, the question is the who, and an email from Sarah says it. I have a question. What companies and executives are being considered for Jobs Ohio?
We have not had any specific people that we are considering. The one thing that we are doing is putting together a very specific qualification. It's very similar to what it takes to be an audit committee member on a public company. You have to understand a P&L. You have to understand the basic business principles on how to create jobs, as well as create a good business as well. Because one thing that I think that we have to be very observant of is the fact that, we can give a grant, we can give a loan, but we want companies that are going to grow and that are entering new, big, exciting markets. So we want to have business folks who really understand how to attack those markets.
My previous guest also raised a lot of concerns about some of the problems that other states that have done public-private partnerships like this have had. And we agreed that a lot of those problems, quid pro quo, cronyism, all of that kind of stuff, accountability issues, are not unique to the private sector. In fact, they were minted in the public sector, perhaps. But how? What are your concerns on that score? How do you take private sector business people and make them accountable to the state?
Well, I think what we're doing, and this is how we're setting up Jobs Ohio with careful work with the legislature and the governor, is to ensure that we have the transparency and the accountability that we'll do our best not to have those things happen. And not only will we have those, code of ethics and conflict of conflict codes, we're also going to do the same thing on the board. And I think one thing that we're doing that is unique is that the board of directors will not be compensated, so you won't enter into a lot of the issues that you would have had before. And I think that's something that we've learned from some of the other ones. In addition, we'll have very specific rules on, if a grant is going out to a company that is in or around their area, we'll have very specific rules to ensure there is no conflict.
I have an email from a listener. They write, I am part owner of a family electrical contractor business. The Ohio Department of Development is our regulating body. They enforce the code or allow the City of Columbus Department of Development to enforce the National Electrical Code on their behalf. We support their work and hope they continue to protect and guide citizens and contractors long into the future. On that score, Director, some folks think this is partly a way to deregulate things and take away a lot of the protections that have been instituted to make people safer in their homes, to make the environment cleaner.
No, I mean it's very important that we maintain those. But at the same time, many of these regulations have created bureaucratic nightmares for companies and for individuals, having to sign multiple different documents multiple different times. I was just with a representative today where and he was complaining on the fact that they have to for their companies, they have to fill out multiple different forms, pay $1,500 per form to fill out, so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. So what we need to do is we need to look at the things that dissuade people from coming to the state, dissuade people from job creation, while ensuring that we have the proper regulation and authority to make sure that people do the right thing.
At the announcement of your appointment, you referred to the Third Frontier Program, which voters renewed last spring to the tune of $700 million. On the Department of Development website, it says, and I quote, a recent analysis led by business people who sit on the Third Frontier's Commission and Advisory Board concluded the project likely would pay back taxpayers by 2014. With just sales and payroll taxes generated by businesses and industries, it helped. You said that you wanted the Third Frontier program to be less focused on research and more focused on job creation or development, job development.
Yep.
What's not developmental about that?
Well, I know that is a that is stated on the website. I will tell you that after looking at one, I'm a huge fan of Third Frontier and mm-hmm. what they've done. And in fact, I had my first Third Frontier Commission meeting last Thursday where we granted quite a bit to several different programs. But the thing that I'm very focused on is let's make sure that it is not pure research, because pure research really, in my opinion, should be being done in universities and at the federal level. Third Frontier is coming out of the taxpayers' pockets, and it needs to be focused on job creation and job retention, in my opinion. And if you look at what happened in Third Frontier, kind of the first iteration, close to 40% of the jobs and 80% of the companies were created in more short-term projects that were basically done through the entrepreneurial, the ESP program, and the grants to small seed venture capitalists. And those guys are very focused on the 3 to 5 year outcome. And I think that's we need to spend more time and resources in that area.
They're pretty picky in the Third Frontier. They have a way of doling out the money that's very private sector oriented. Is that the sort of thing you're looking at when you talk about operating something like Jobs Ohio?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, they have a very, very careful selection process that appears to be very effective. I think there's some things we want to change there. But, yeah, I mean, what we want to do, the key thing with Jobs Ohio is to really create an environment that allows us to create jobs in Ohio, hence the title of the agency, and free us from a lot of the things you cannot do in a government entity, and you know, move at the speed of business that we've talked about in the past. Also, allow us to work with the private sector in innovative ways, and then lastly, benefit from you know things that are happening in Ohio and help us reinvest into the Ohio economy.
In the same announcement at your appointment, you referred to the bonding authority the state has by way of its profits from liquor sales.
And yep.
Currently, the Ohio Revised Code authorizes those funds to pay for the issuance of Clean Ohio Revitalization Bonds. They're issued by the treasurer of the state to fund projects approved by the Clean Ohio Council for grants and loans to projects that provide for the environmentally safe and productive development and use or reuse of publicly and privately owned lands within the state. You want to change that? How the money is spent?
No. I think you're talking about a different bond set.
Well, this is from the liquor, but...
Well, no, there are a couple different ones that are funded by liquor profits.
Okay.
The ones I was talking about was the 166 bonds,
okay,
which are mainly focused towards economic development.
And how would you change how they're used?
Oh, I would, you know, what I think I said in that conference was the 166 bonds, I think something is very innovative and I really like. I don't think I would change them very much at all. The only thing I might possibly change is I think we've been a little overly generous on some of the interest rates we've been charging, especially in today's economic climate.
614-292-8513. If you'd like to speak with the Ohio Department of Development's new director, Mark Kwame. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. So I imagine you've studied lots of other programs in other states by now for the best practices. Alex Fisher from Columbus Partnership talked about them earlier. He mentioned that at the local level there are better practices, perhaps, and also perhaps what to avoid. What's the model program operating out there right now, in your opinion?
Well, I think each state has its own issues, and each state has programs that it has made that work best for them. And, you know, what we've done is looked at what's worked and what's not worked, as simultaneously taken in consideration that we are in the state of Ohio, we're not in Florida. So, for example, you take Florida, for example, or you take Texas, for example. They have different weather, which we all know about, but more importantly, they have no income tax. And so they have a different way of attracting companies and individuals for investment in those states. We have to look at it differently because of the structures that we have here. So what we've tried to do is looked at what's worked, what's not worked, but more importantly, construct something that we think is going to be best for the state of Ohio.
What is it about the state of Ohio that sets it apart, in your opinion?
Well, I think the state of Ohio is a very unique place. One is its geographic location. 60% of the population in the United States is within 600 miles. And then combined with that, we have an excellent transportation system. We have rivers, we have railroads, we have phenomenal highways. And that allows us to create a logistical advantage that, quite frankly, a Florida or a Texas or a California or even a New York can enjoy. And so what we need to do is take those advantages because, you know, one thing that's happening in the marketplace today because of the internet and other things, it's not only, you know, how quickly you can make it, it's how quickly you can get the product there. I mean, people, we were a funder in Zappos, the online shoe company, and you know, the reason why they grew so rapidly and so successfully was the fact that, you know, you'd order your shoes online by 4 p.m., they'd be at your doorstep the next morning before 10 a.m. I mean, basically, consumers and businesses want stuff there now, and I think that's a unique advantage that Ohio has that no other state has.
What about the idea that the governor turned down the $400 million in federal grants for passenger rail to develop passenger rail in the state of Ohio? We already have stations in Cincinnati and Cleveland, but nothing that cuts across the state.
Yeah, I mean that's something that I know he talked about on the campaign trail, and quite frankly, I have not spent a whole bunch of time investigating that. I think it'd probably be best for you to ask the governor's office about that.
Well, I was just asking you in terms of your role as development director.
Well, I think on the development side, we're working with the major freight liners on making sure that we have the right freight rails to the right places.
Mm-hmm. Robert from Worthington, welcome to the show. You're on the air with Director Kwame.
Hello. I'd like to sort of express why I'm a little leery of the privatization of government programs. I can remember when Congressman Kasich worked for the first Bush administration, he was deeply involved with the budget process. He proposed that our data collection by the U.S. Geological Survey over water quality, water quantity, both surface and groundwater, which obviously to me cannot be make a profit off of that. It's a public good. But I see, and now going on with reducing what, not only by the Kasich administration, but the federal government, a lot of the new congressmen that are Republicans and senators, they're proposing a lot of the environmental regulations be tamed down of the U.S. EPA and Ohio EPA. And I think there's some ideological reasons, the belief that the private market can just do more than it should do. We have public goods that should be recognized that you can't make profit on.
Director, we have just about a minute and a half. You want to respond to that? And thank you, Robert, for your call.
Again, I think that's going to be handled mainly out of the EPA department. I think the key thing that what I know the governor wants, and I would like to see as a director of development, is to ensure that we have intelligent regulations that do protect the environment, that do protect the individuals. But at the same time, I was up with the some folks up in Toledo, and just the process in order to understand if they had a place where they could build a plant was so long and arduous, they didn't even decide to move forward. So those are the sorts of things we got to ensure that we don't have.
So living in a state with a nice environment that's progressive and looking forward to making the environment even healthier, particularly a Rust Belt type of state like Ohio, that's still important?
Oh, I think it's very important to have, you know, the EPA regulations and make sure that we're not people aren't doing the wrong thing. But at the same time, we got to create an environment that's open, open for business.
All right. Director Mark Kwame, he's director of the Ohio Department of Development. Thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Appreciate it. That's all the time we have for All Sides. Thanks for joining us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.